Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The criminal complaint describes an unappetizing smorgasbord of graft and greed involving six officials who together built a corridor of corruption stretching from Queens and the Bronx to Rockland County and all the way up to Albany.
U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara yesterday, and let's dig some more into this corruption indictment in connection with the New York City mayoral campaign and see what we can find below the surface. We have the leaders of two good government groups for this, Dick Dady, executive director of the Citizens Union, and Sharon Lerner, executive director of New York State's Common Cause chapter. Good morning to both of you. Welcome back. I'm sorry it's under these circumstances.
Susan Lerner, yes, it's always unfortunate that we get an opportunity to talk, Brian, when things are at their murkiest.
I'm sorry, I called you Sharon. And here is a very short clip of U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara, again, quoting the indicted city councilman Dan Halloran on how people get things that they want in New York politics.
That's politics. That's politics. It's all about how much. And that's our politicians in New York.
And that, again, was Halloran, the indicted city councilman, speaking on this tape as the U.S. attorney was quoting him. And so, Dick Dady, was Halloran really just talking about his allegedly corrupt self there? Or do you think this is a systemic problem? If you want a ballot line, if you want a development plan approved, two of the examples from this case, you routinely have to bribe people.
I mean, he was talking not only just about himself, but about others, I'm sure. I mean, to hear his words is just so stunning and is evidence of a larger systemic problem. Enough already with these guys. I mean, we see this crime wave of corruption increasing in the city and in Albany, and it needs to come to an end. And, you know, kudos to Preet for coming forward with his investigation and really unveiling, you know, this corruption that goes on. People know it, but to hear it in such detail is really very upsetting.
And listeners, if you have anything you want to say or anything you want to ask about this sort of simple, sort of complicated New York corruption case or the underlying issues that we'll be digging into here, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Susan, Joe Bruno, Pedro Espada, Malcolm Smith, that's three state Senate majority leaders or former leaders charged with corruption in just the last few years. Is that a coincidence?
No. We have a very corrupted and corrupting culture in Albany that's a pay-to-play culture. And what's most upsetting is that this confirms everybody's worst suspicions about how state government and government in general works. And what we don't want to see is people who say, well, it's such a corrupt system, I don't have any role, I wash my hands of the whole thing, I'm disengaged, you know, they're all thieves, I'm not going to participate. It's why we believe right now there needs to be an immediate and strong reaction. There is a way to begin to change that culture of pay-to-play in Albany. That's why we're working so hard for fair elections.
And we'll get back to what some of the solutions might be. Dick Smith, like Espada, was one of these so-called independent Democrats, or is, who support Republicans for the Senate leadership in deals that make them more powerful along the way. Is there anything more susceptible to corruption about these so-called independent Democrats, or is that irrelevant?
I think it's irrelevant, but I mean, it's ironic that the IDC, which was born out of a desire to distance itself from corruption, is now tainted by the very corruption it sought to distance itself from. The fact that Smith thought and Halloran thought that their corrupting acts would go unnoticed or unpunished just speaks to the brazenness of elected officials like them who think they can get away with this.
Most of the headlines are going to the envelopes of cash allegedly used to bribe these Republican Party officials to allow Smith on the ballot for mayor, even though he's a Democrat, to run as Republican. But Smith also promised the fake developers in the case that he would deliver $500,000 in taxpayer funds to their development project. Here's 45 seconds of the U.S. attorney on that.
Smith broached the subject of his mayoral ambition with two men he believed were real estate developers and sought their help in influencing the Republican county chairman. In fact, these two men were working with the government. One was an undercover FBI agent, and the other was a cooperating witness. As alleged, Smith had repeated recorded conversations with these two men, sometimes in a hotel room, about making payments to party leaders so that he could run on the Republican line for mayor. In return, as described, Senator Smith expressly agreed to then direct $500,000 in New York State funding for improvement of a road that would benefit the supposed real estate project the two claimed that they were putting together in Spring Valley in Rockland County.
So Susan Lerner from Common Cause, they turned out to be undercover agents. But what's troubling there is the suggestion that bribes are made not just with a politician's own money, but with our money, that he could direct a project as part of a corrupt deal. How routine do you think that is?
Well, it's one of the big problems that we have with the discretionary funding at all levels of government. Is it really being used for public purposes? Is it being used as a political slush fund in order to achieve greater notoriety on behalf of the individual legislator or elected official who's doling out the money? Or is it, in this instance, being used for corrupt purposes? It's a real problem, and it shows a need for really better oversight and a change in this pay-to-play culture.
George in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, George. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. Of course they think they can use our money. What happened to the reports from the U.S. Attorney's Office and the Department of Investigation on the city council embezzlement scandal that the speaker confessed to in 2008?
Aha. Uh-huh. And in fact, George, thank you. Another less noticed part of this indictment is that Councilman Halloran is also charged with misuse of discretionary funds, often called member items, that George is referring to, that Susan referred to in general a minute ago. Member items, meaning he gets to spend this money on his district with a lot of discretion as a city council member. And here is U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara yesterday on that.
Separate and apart from this bribery scheme, the complaint outlines the latest scandal involving the attempted corrupt diversion of city council discretionary funds. As alleged, Councilman Halloran also accepted bribes in exchange for agreeing to steer some of his so-called member item funds to the undercover agent and the cooperating witness through a company he thought that they controlled.
So, Dick Dady from the Citizens Union, are you familiar with the details of that?
Yes. It just shows, again, the brazenness of Dan Halloran to promise something that he could not really deliver. And that's what the charges arising out of yesterday's arrest. You know, we believe that many of the reforms that have been put in place at the city council over the last number of years, you know, would have likely prevented the very ability of Halloran to do what he promised to do. But they would not have prevented the arrogance of someone like Halloran from promising things and taking money as bribe in the form of a bribe to do something that he could not deliver on. So the reforms, I think, you know, just, you know, would have prevented what Halloran set out to do.
So,
but he just got caught by the U.S. attorney first.
Reflecting the concern of our caller, George, on our program yesterday, mayoral hopeful Bill de Blasio tried to lay that part at the feet of City Council Speaker Christine Quinn, obviously running against him for the Democratic mayoral nomination. De Blasio saying it was part of a pattern of failure on her part to stop council members from abusing these discretionary funds. Can you, Dick, remind us of the context of that, or do you have an opinion as to whether that's a fair charge?
It's not a fair charge because Halloran didn't get to spend any of the money that he promised to these guys. And there's so much pre-clearance vetting that now goes on for organizations, and there's a great deal of scrutiny that takes place during the entire process and in the post-audit, that it's very unlikely and almost improbable that these funds would be misused in the future. Again, let's keep in mind, he promised to do something that he never was allowed to do because they caught him.
Susan Lerner, do I see from your face that we have a disagreement for the first time this morning between our two esteemed good government group leaders?
Well, I think Dick is right in the sense that if this was a straw development, it wouldn't have gotten any government money, but there's still a major problem with member items. If you look at the way in which they're allocated, they're being allocated at the city council level on a political basis, not on any objective standard, not on the basis of need, and that's why we at Common Cause have suggested that perhaps it's time to do away with member items and not have them be a political reward or retribution for anybody to use.
And, you know, in our report last year, we actually called for the equitable, equal distribution of member items without the speaker involvement. So there are still reforms in terms of how the money gets put out there, but not in terms of the vetting of the organizations.
But there is a policy disagreement between you two here as to whether member items have any role, whether individual members of the legislature, city council in this case, should have discretion to spend any money in their districts without getting it approved by the full legislature. Is that correct?
Yes. And, you know, as far as the discretion, we think that a legislative representative has a role, but we don't think that they should be the final word because the temptation is just too much to use this for political purposes.
Dick, one more time.
Yeah, they don't. No, the legislature actually votes on the member item, so it's not entirely at the discretion of the individual council member. So there is a whole process of review and approval that involves the whole legislature.
Yeah, but then you look at how they're doled out, and you know that individual members are not exercising really any oversight on anybody else's request, and then it falls to the speaker who doles out the member items based on who she wants to reward and who she wants to punish. And that's not just the speaker. I think it's speakers
in
general.
I think we've established your different points of view on discretionary spending by members of council and other legislators. And let's go next to Chris in Amityville. Chris, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah. Of course, one of the huge barriers to competing with these establishment guys is just getting on the ballot. 4 years ago, when I ran for DA out here in Suffolk, we were thrown off the ballot by an employee of the Board of Elections, the bipartisan Board of Elections. All of the major parties had nominated the same guy for DA, and we were trying to present an alternative to him. We were thrown off the ballot, alleging that several hundred of our signatures, we had far more than we needed, were invalid. There was no opinion from signature to signature. The bipartisan Republican-Democrat Board of Elections simply said the protest is valid and threw us off. We went to court. And the court found a technicality to throw us out because all the judges out there, out here, everywhere in the state, have to be nominated every 7 years by the party bosses, or they don't get to stay judges. And so the whole system is designed to work against us. And if you talk about trying to do public financing of the campaigns, well, who do you think is going to be allocating the public financing? Who's going to set up those rules to protect the party bosses?
Aha, Susan Lerner, there's a libertarian challenge to your fix for this problem.
Well, they're two separate problems. I mean, the caller has raised a really important issue about the role of parties in our election system, and that's different from the question of campaign finance and a pay-to-play culture, which is what Fair Elections is designed to address. It's an entirely separate problem, and we could spend a lot of time talking about Wilson Pakula and the role of political parties in terms of what the public's expectation is versus how they're actually working in terms of who gets on the ballot and how our elections are very badly administered in this state.
Yeah, and the caller is right on in terms of how the elections are administered. I mean, that's why Citizens Union wants to end this Tammany Hall political party bossism and supports the idea of nonpartisan elections where we remove party influence on who gets onto the ballot. We also think, Brian, that one of the reforms that should be out there is that, you know, the U.S. District Attorney yesterday took aim at the state and the city elected officials for not doing enough. We believe that the Attorney General should be given the power to pursue public corruption, either through legislation or by an executive order of the governor, which is something that has not yet been done and could actually go a long ways to fighting the political corruption we see from yesterday.
Nonpartisan elections, you say? You know who else supports that?
All of this comes out of the fact that we have partisan elections when cities aren't partisan. Partisan elections deprive the public of the right to pick their own leaders.
But, Susan, you disagree.
Well, it's not a silver bullet fix. I lived in Los Angeles. We had nonpartisan elections. And guess what? The voters knew who were the Democrat and who were the Republicans. The voters are looking for a signifier to help them understand who the candidates are. And there's no question that a party affiliation is what most voters are looking for. So just saying, oh, we'll have nonpartisan elections does not solve the problem. It simply substitutes the mayor's personally organized dollars for organized people. There is a role for political parties. We just haven't gotten it right.
And that's why Citizens Union supports the idea that each of the candidates that get onto the ballot are able to identify themselves as affiliated with a particular party so that they do have some sense, the voters do have some sense of what the candidate stands for.
It really, unfortunately, nonpartisan elections, as they play out, allow wealthy individuals who have no political background to come in and use their money to convince the voters to put them in office. Sometimes that works out well for the voters. Sometimes it doesn't. And it's not, we believe at Common Cause, not an instant fix.
It would also allow for voters who are not a part of a political party to actually vote in the most determinative election in the city of New York, the Democratic Party primary.
Don in Yorktown. You're on WNYC. Hi, Don.
Yes, good morning. It's been said that Mayor Bloomberg went through the same process in the payments as an independent. And that was legal. How is this illegal now? Can you please explain it?
I'm so glad you brought that up, which we were going to get to anyway. And that is the line between the illegal payments to Republican Party officials to let Malcolm Smith on the ballot and the legal payments that Mayor Bloomberg made in 2001 when he wanted to run as a Republican, but he wasn't a registered Republican, donations, in effect, Susan, from his personal wealth to the party organization rather than to the pockets of these individuals.
It's deeply troubling, and it's why we have a real problem with Wilson Pakula, I think, and how it's played out.
And again, Wilson Pakula is the law that gives these party chairs the power to determine who can run on their ballot lines if they're not registered
exactly
in the party.
Exactly right. I mean, the history of Wilson Pakula is really interesting because it came out of the Red Scare period. It was designed to eliminate a very popular congressman who was running under the American Labor Party line, but also as a Democrat and a Republican. It is, in its essence, an anti-small-D Democratic impulse. Again, we need to have a more effective way of allowing parties to be positive actors in our political system.
Wilson Pakula, by the way, anybody remember Malcolm Wilson, who became governor for about 10 minutes when Nelson Rockefeller went off to be vice president after Watergate? Am I getting this right?
Yes, you're right.
Then he was defeated for election by Hugh Carey, what seems like probably about 10 minutes after that. Dick, what did you want to add?
Well, I just think that nonpartisan elections would remove all of this. You would not see the candidates for seeking all these different ballot lines having the opportunity to contribute to all these parties because you would just have open up the ballot so that you have far greater access and far greater voter choice.
Well, we're just about out of time, but I want to take Wallace in Hillsborough for one more, let's say, cross the Hudson comparative thought. Wallace, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Someone mentioned earlier, a lot of politicians now, it's basically, it's like Tammany Hall. It's always been going on, but people are getting more exposed and caught. It's throughout the country. That's why a lot of people really don't believe in the political system anymore. Like, Mayor Bloomberg basically bought his way into a third term for city council. You have Espinada, whatever, the councilman back a few years ago.
Espada.
I used to live in New York, so a lot of these things, it's just like an ongoing cycle.
Uh-huh.
And basically none of these politicians have any interest in helping the people.
And now you see it in New Jersey, where you currently live. Remember a couple of summers ago, and what was it, 27 local officials were?
Yes. That was a few years ago.
Rolled out in one big indictment. And so, very briefly, Susan Lerner, New Yorkers tend to make fun of New Jersey for having corrupt politicians everywhere you turn. Does either state actually win the booby prize in the battle of the scoundrels?
Well, I think they're passing the booby prize back and forth, and that's why we believe that we need to empower voters. We can't just sit and criticize and say, this is a terrible system. We as voters have a responsibility to demand change. And the fair election system is a way to empower people to tell their leaders, this has got to stop. We cannot have this pay-to-play culture. We can't have a culture that takes good people who get elected to office and convince them that the only way in which they can succeed is to become corrupted. We start that change with fair elections.
All right, listeners, keep this conversation going on our webpage. People are tweeting at us. I see too. At Brian Lehrer, webpage WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And we thank Susan Lerner from Common Cause New York, Dick Dady from the Citizens Union for having this piece of the underlying conversation with us after yesterday's indictments. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC. Coming up next, why is Kim Jong-un threatening to shoot preemptive nuclear weapons at U.S. cities? And how seriously should we take him? We'll try to answer that question.